Welcome, listeners, on the podcast world. This is Devin.
And this is Casey.
From Between the Reels. This week, we've got some great news. We got a review, as well as another section of From the Vault. But we'll wait till then to give you the nice surprise of the movie we picked for this week. So moving on to the news, there's actually been a lot of interesting things going on today. Again, some more comic book news, as well as some other reboots and things like that that I'm pretty excited about. So first, regarding some reboots, what we have here is one is this interview from Total Film, and this is regarding the Godzilla remake that is being directed by Gareth Edwards. And this is actually really interesting. What he said in this Total Film interview is, "I've always been interested in Godzilla and the ideas around him. I really wanted to see another Godzilla film and jumped at the opportunity. My main idea was to imagine if this really happened, what would it be like? I want to take a grounded, realistic approach to a Godzilla film." So, Casey, what do you think about that?
Well, I think he's got the right approach. I mean, if you've ever seen his movie Monsters, great film, a very low-key film, but it's very much Godzilla without Godzilla. So it kind of has – as long as he does it in that same vein, I think he's going to be on the right track.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because the Matthew Broderick film, you know, with that and then with Puff Daddy and the Led Zeppelin, you know, destroying – you know, basically decimating Kashmir, leaving such a bad taste in my mouth. I am very excited for this reboot because Godzilla is so awesome. And just the fact, too, is it's not just going to be some, you know, Independence Day or, you know, where it's just basically an action flick. You know, the fact to kind of throw some of those things in there and kind of potentially make it, I guess, kind of thought-provoking makes me really excited about it. And, again, because I love Cloverfield, just because I had that, you know, kind of what would happen if a big monster just showed up. But because it was in the found footage genre, the shaky cam got kind of nauseating after a while. So this makes me really excited because it has everything I loved about Cloverfield, but without the, hopefully, potentially, I guess, I'm guessing, the nauseating camera angles. You're not, you know, feel like you have to puke after watching the film. So
absolutely. And Godzilla's, you know, he's a classic movie character, and he deserves a good run at the films, which he hasn't had in a very long time.
Oh, no, not at all. So I think this is great news, and sounds like he's got the right approach to this, so... Another reboot that's on the way that I'm extremely excited about. Casey doesn't know who this character is, and it almost makes me feel like we need to discuss this. But Disney was actually potentially thinking about rebooting Condor Man.
Makes me laugh every time I hear it.
Oh, I mean, so you just need to go to IGN.com and look at this article just to see what he looks like. So, as Casey pointed out to me earlier, and... Basically, what this is about, it's about a comic book illustrator who is British. He lives in Paris, and he basically becomes a superhero named Condor Man. And he teams up with a secret agent and kind of helps fight the Russians. And he's got his own Condor car and a Condor Man boat and different things like that. But it's just so awful. But as a little kid, I rented this movie all the time.
So is he like France's version of Batman?
Kind of.
Only instead of using fear, he uses humor, judging by the way he dresses.
Well, so the first sequence of the film is him testing out his new costume, and he basically just flies around, and he bombs into one of the Paris rivers. So it's a horribly campy, awful movie, but it's so good at the same time. And so I'm actually really excited about this. I mean, I think it flopped in the box office when it first came out. It kind of has now gained cult status. I have a feeling it'll probably flop again if it comes out again. I just don't know how they can make this into a good movie because it's such a ridiculous premise. But basically, because as an insider of the rumored project said, the idea remains the same. It would all begin with a solo movie, the obligatory Origins movie. And Robert Pattinson's name has been floated around. And if that's the case, then yeah, there's no hope this will be a great movie. But at the same time...
At least maybe if he's in it, it'll make money.
Yeah, exactly. All those teenage girls.
And he's willing to do Twilight. So you know he's willing to do just about anything.
His standards aren't the highest. So, you know, I'm really excited. We'll see if this works out. But at the same time, I have a feeling it's going to bomb. So maybe next time, Disney. Now moving on. Now some more comic book news that we found is one, the 20th Century Fox. They basically had the X-Men license, and of course we have, you know, Marvel has their own thing going on. But this is something that we thought was really interesting, was the X-Men franchise producer Lauren Shuler Donner, who is the wife of Richard Donner, basically was asked about the success of the Avengers, and what she responded with, this is on Crave Online, she said, I would love it. I personally have close ties to Marvel because of Kevin Feige, because Kevin worked for me. But take our characters and mingle them in the way that they were written? Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like discussing the idea of X-Men and the Avengers being in the same movie, she's on board. I assume Joss Whedon's on board, especially since he just wrote the critically acclaimed relaunch of X-Men. I just think this would be incredible. I mean, to see these two on the big screen, fighting alongside. Of course, I would rather have them duke it out against each other, like the X-Men versus Avengers comic that just came out. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're right. And I think doing it where they're opposed to each other is going to be the most successful route.
Because it just might be too bloated, I think.
Exactly. And that's a whole lot of ego in one movie. I mean, even if you just have the 5-6 Avengers and then 5-6 X-Men. I mean, that's still, you know, a huge cast.
Well, then you have to have future Avengers that pop up in the future movies.
Exactly. So you never know how many people, because there's no feasible way for this to be set before, 3-4 years from now, with the track that Marvel's taking. Unless, you know, they're just going to completely blindside everyone and make Avengers 2 this scenario, which, yeah. You know, I wouldn't put it past Joss Whedon. He's all about, you know, doing things different and trying new things.
That's the thing, is I can almost see this as Avengers 3.
Yeah.
But at the end, would 20th Century Fox also lead up to that as well with their movies? Because they got their own thing going as well with, you know, X-Men and, with their X-Men franchise. So it'll be interesting. I personally want to see them duke it out with each other because I would love to see Wolverine take on the Hulk. That would be, to see that on screen would be incredible.
Absolutely. So. And if someone's willing to kill Cyclops, it would make it even better.
Besides having him going the lame way as he did in the third movie where he just gets kissed and his soul gets sucked out or something.
Apparently.
I don't know what happened.
But his glasses survive, so that's important.
So, we'll see if that ever comes to fruition. Right now, it's just kind of more of a what if, and that'd be cool, but make it happen, Marvel and 20th Century Fox.
Exactly. I think every geek in the world would be indebted to you forever would go see this 12 times. And it would make the Avengers look like nothing with the kind of money people would drop on this.
Oh, yeah. And so if you got Singer and Donner and Whedon on this project, I mean, you can't go wrong.
It's a powerhouse.
Oh, yeah. So lastly, I got a couple more, but also in Marvel news is we have also a rumor going around that Emily Blunt and Ruth Wilson are being eyed to play Miss Marvel. Now, Emily Blunt, of course, was recently in
Looper,
which got great reviews. And if you don't know who Ruth Wilson is...
Yeah, it's definitely not a household name quite yet.
No, but she really needs to be, because if you've not seen Luther, put on your instant queue on Netflix and watch it. It is one of the best TV shows. The British just know how to do it right, in my opinion.
The Brits know how to do TV. You got to give them that.
So, because Luther is incredible, and she's not really a friend or anything.
She's the female lead.
Yeah.
Kind of a frenemy in different times.
But she does an incredible job of just playing this extremely intelligent, extremely sadistic person. And she just knocks her role out of the park. And so... have her on the big screen, even if she... I think you can't go wrong with either one.
No.
But I just want to see Ruth Wilson just have a major lead just so that people can know and appreciate who she is and what she's done.
Absolutely. And, you know, it probably couldn't even hurt that Idris Elba, who plays Luther, is in the Thor franchise.
Yeah, that's right.
So it couldn't hurt that she already knows people in it. And really, she needs to become a household name here in the U.S. because she is fantastic.
Oh, exactly. And that's another point, though, is where do you think if when they do have Miss Marvel, which movie do you think she'll come in for? Because it seems like this is for Avengers 2.
Yeah, the articles say Avengers 2, but a lot of stuff would happen before Avengers 2. And granted, we're just starting Phase 2, so there's a lot of stuff to happen. But with her origin story, if you look in the comic books, it involves the Skree and, you know, which is a group of aliens, different from what we saw in the first Avengers. So either you'd have to adjust her origin story to instead be the Chitauri from the first Avengers to kind of fill in that place, or you'd have to introduce another race of aliens, which means you're going to look at your cosmic movies, Thor 2, Guardians of the Galaxy, things like that.
Which I think will be Guardians of the Galaxy. That's my personal opinion. So, but yeah, we'll see how that turns out. So the other thing as well, last on my bit of news regarding, and this is regarding another, some more comic book news, is Armie Hammer has now been rumored to play Batman in the new Justice League movie. Which, again, I don't know. I mean, said Armie Hammer is going to be the Lone Ranger in the upcoming movie, The Lone Ranger. So I don't really know what other – I know he also was in The Network.
Social Network.
Social Network, that's right. You know, as the twins. So it'll be interesting to see. I think he's got great – he's a great actor. I think he's young enough to kind of play off that playboy billionaire facade that Bruce Wayne does. But it'll be interesting to see. I think once Lone Ranger comes out, it'll be interesting to see how he holds out an action movie. Which, for me, I think that's the biggest holdup or thing I'm kind of waiting to see before I get excited about this.
Exactly. You're going to be comparing him against Christian Bale, who I thought was a great Batman. But I think just as far as looks, I think Armie Hammer's Bruce Wayne would be much more believable as a young billionaire playboy than...
Because Christian Bale played the great recluse.
He did. So which would help since you're trying to go in a different direction after rebooting from the franchise.
Exactly. But that's the thing, too, is it shows that Bruce Wayne is going to be a very young Batman here. He's not going to be a seasoned veteran or anything like that. But, of course, also, if this is true, then we know that there'll be no Joseph Gordon-Levitt, no Robin. So all theories of that will be debunked. But I guess that's what happened, though, is because Armie Hammer, at a time, was thought to be played to play Batman, then got dropped, and I guess now he's getting back on the stove of whether that happens. So we'll see, though. But anyway, what do you got, Casey?
There's always hope. This is huge news. Agent Coulson lives. Well, at least that's what stickers around Manhattan want you to believe. some pictures have been taken recently of random stickers being placed all over Manhattan that are just black stickers with white lettering that says nothing more than Agent Coulson lives.
Do you think this is a studio thing?
I don't know. I hope so. Because, everyone is a huge fan of Agent Coulson and was sad to see him go in the Avengers. So if there's a way they can bring him back, I think everyone would be all for it.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, though, that makes me wonder is if this is a studio marketing ploy, I say, hats off to those guys because this is an awesome way to do it.
Absolutely,
they're
definitely earning their money.
Yeah. So with Dark Knight Rises, you had the bat, the chalk bat sign everywhere. And then Dark Knight had some stuff as well. So anything that does stuff, things like this, I'm all about it.
Absolutely.
Of course, if it's not studio and just some random guys putting these stickers, I want to say my hat's off to you as well. But at the same time, shame on you for giving all of our hopes up. So.
To go with that, it actually has nothing to do with that. But if you grew up in the 80s, chances are you've heard of the movie The Monster Squad.
Classic. It's a classic movie.
It is. It's fantastic. Everyone who was a child in the 80s, either you love this movie or you're dead. great movie. It puts a bunch of 12 to 14-year-old boys up against the classic monster movie villains. Dracula, Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, Frankenstein, all of them.
The Mummy.
Exactly. And it's fantastic. It's a tongue-in-cheek horror comedy.
Yeah, it's not really necessarily a horror.
Yeah, not necessarily horror. It's got these horror
and it's not
elements.
Like Gremlins at all.
No, it's
not saying horror, but Gremlins is a comedy with a lot of horror aspect into it.
Exactly. This is a comedy that's got a horror setting with no actual real horror in it.
Yeah, except for the three virgins who get turned into vampires. So it's probably the scariest moment of the whole movie.
They are awfully creepy when they're walking down the middle of the street.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're it's a great movie. Well, one of the original producers, Rob Cohen, has said that he still wants to have this remade. It's one of the best movies he's ever done, and he wants to direct it this time around. Now, it's been sitting in development hell for quite a while, but...
Like most reboots.
Exactly, movies. Which generally I'm on board with them just sitting around and never actually getting made. But being part of the original, I have hope that he might be able to do it right. And if with him involved, I don't know that I would be completely opposed to seeing the reboot of Monster Squad.
Oh, no. I mean, I could see this being a great reboot. As long as they don't do a horror aspect of it and kind of keep its roots as being more of a comedy, campy type thing, mm-hmm. I would be very much for a monster remake reboot. So,
absolutely. And it's a built-in audience. It's got 14-year-old boys, and it's geared directly at 14-year-old boys. So it's tough to go wrong when you have this deck stacked in your favor like that.
Exactly. But at the same time, though, the 80s movies just kind of had this magic about them. It's probably nostalgia, but as long as they can kind of recreate that. Because many movies that are rebooted said they fail at that. I mean, look at Indiana Jones 4.
Mm-hmm.
Did not hold up at all. I mean, just it was very sad being an Indiana Jones fan watching that again.
Yeah.
As an example. There's others as well where many times in the rebooter they just don't have the same lasting appeal when it's done by the same creators. Mm-hmm. So...
They either try for the same feel and fail, or they have to take it in a completely different direction. And I don't think this could succeed in a different direction.
No.
So it would put a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah. But, you know, he seems like he has the heart for it, so I'm looking pretty optimistic about it.
Yeah, absolutely. A movie that's not in development hell, we actually just got a trailer for it. The first trailer is for the movie Hitchcock. This is a docudrama about Alfred Hitchcock and... it's kind of a love story between he and his wife that's set during the filming of the movie Psycho. Watching the trailer, it looks funny. It looks incredibly funny, which I didn't expect when I was reading all the stuff about it.
Because Hitchcock doesn't really seem like he had a very comedic life.
if you've ever watched Alfred Hitchcock Presents, you hear his jokes a lot at the beginning of that show, and jokes is a bit of a stretch. But it looks absolutely fantastic. Anthony Hopkins plays Alfred Hitchcock. You have Helen Mirren as his wife. You have Scarlett Johansson as Janet Leigh. And everyone looks great. Everyone sounds great. And just the feel makes it seem very fun.
Oh, yeah. And it's I always appreciate these kind of docudramas. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. in Chaplin. Great movie, and you kind of got when you get to see what going on behind the scenes, it makes you appreciate those classic films and Chaplin's films so much more because you kind of get to see what his vision was and what was going on at the time that influenced those films. And so I love even if it's a huge stretch of what really happened, it's still very interesting. I mean, even Hugo, even though it was very much set in this fantasy thing. Hugo as well made me appreciate those classic movies a lot as well. Just because you go up and you realize that even if it's very stretched out, a lot of the key points really did happen. And so with these great visionary filmmakers.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the people love the filmmaking process. It's kind of a magical process in mm-hmm. a lot of people's minds in these movies. Kind of have a strange way of bringing it down to earth and making it like a more real process. But somehow not demystifying the whole process at the same time. I think it'll be great to watch. I'm excited for it.
Oh, yeah. Anthony Hopkins, Scarlett Johansson, you can't go wrong.
No, I think you'll be in good shape. And now the final bit of news we've got, which continues our real-life movies or historical movies based on actual events. Lincoln premiered this week at the New York Film Festival. Everyone's been super excited about this film. With the trailers, the look is absolutely fantastic. If you've seen pictures of Daniel Day-Lewis dressed up as Abraham Lincoln, he looks fantastic. So what kind of reactions did it get? Very mixed, actually. People either absolutely loved it or thought it was incredibly boring.
Yeah, I think basically if you love these type of movies, I mean... If you love these type of movies, it's going to be the greatest thing in the world. But if you're expecting some action, you're not going to get it. Yeah, there might be some Civil War scenes, but the end of Amistad, it'll be like a 2-second clip.
Yeah. Pretty much watch the trailer and you'll see about all the action scenes that that
yeah,
are in the
exactly.
whole movie. But it was kind of surprising. I think everyone had, and it's Steven Spielberg who directed this, so they expected it just to float out as a masterpiece and be great. But really, the whole movie is based around the passing of one amendment. So it's a lot of Congress. It's a lot of backroom deals. It doesn't carry, you know, it's not like a whole life biography of Abraham Lincoln. So I think people were kind of shocked by that, and it threw a lot of them off. So they were expecting one thing, and it came in completely different.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, too, is, you know, my I love history. Because I love history doesn't mean I get history right all the time. But my big problem with a lot of these historical dramas is Hollywood just seems to wash over a lot of the interesting, in my opinion, the interesting details of these people's lives. And so, for instance, with Lincoln, I don't know much about it, but just from what I've seen of the trailer, I'm afraid that they're going to have Lincoln continue this idea that Lincoln was, you know, the one, the be-all, end-all of emancipating the slaves, that he was the one who got everyone on board and all this stuff. But in reality, you know, he was at the caboose end of that. You know, it was more of his cabinet, members of his cabinet were much more wanting to make the Civil War a war about freeing the slaves. And he wanted to keep it towards, you know, restoring the Union. And also, so you had that influencing him. You had slaves actually running across the Union lines saying they're free. That influenced him, and that was a huge part of that. And also the Emancipation Proclamation didn't really do much to free the slaves, and that was much more of a, it seemed like to be much more of a, more of a, just a military gimmick, you know, type thing. So, you know, it didn't really do much in terms of actually emancipating. So it'll be interesting to see if they talk about that, if they show more of Lincoln's journey to becoming the great emancipator. Because he ended up, you know, what he did was great, but it took a while for him to get to that point. And I find that much more interesting and much more dramatic than him being the cause and trying to convince everyone around him to do that.
Kind of more of a the journey than the results.
Exactly.
Based movie.
Because that's what I love about Abraham Lincoln so much, is the journey that he took to get where what he's now known for. And so I hope that's what the movie's more about, but I guess we'll kind of see.
So, and, you know, being Hollywood, you know, it'll be Hollywooded up. So hopefully it's accurate. Hopefully it's close. And if not, you can fall back on Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Which is a classic.
Much more historically accurate film.
So you that's the Abraham Lincoln I love, and that's the one I believe in. So
exactly. Until someone can prove me different. That's the way it really happened. And the last bit of news about it is the cast for this movie is just a veritable laundry list of who's who. It's got, I said, Daniel Day-Lewis. It's directed by Steven Spielberg. It's got Tommy Lee Jones. It's got Jackie Earle Haley. It's got Sally Field, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Pretty much, if you're popular in Hollywood, you're in this movie right now. And the overall consensus is from just about everyone that's seen it is, out of all the actors, out of all the great performances, Tommy Lee Jones blows everyone out of the water. Says he pretty much steals every scene that he is in and just turns it into fantastic, which is great because Tommy Lee Jones is a fantastic actor who's been in some great movies and has also been in some very bad movies.
Oh, yeah. And it's great to see him finally, I want to say, reclaim what he is in a sense, because I said he was a great Fugitive.
Exactly. That kind of set his career. It set him up as being a great actor.
Oh, yeah. And I think he was even in, what, The Client, I believe?
Yeah.
So it's also a great movie for its time, but, you know, then you got Batman Forever as Two-Face. And, ugh. I mean, he has some real big misses. So the fact that not only did he have a good part, but he stole the show, I think is great, because there's so many actors who had those great moments, but then they kind of fade away when they get older. And so it's glad to know that he still got it.
Exactly. And, you know, hats off to him for being able to do it, and hats off to Steven Spielberg for recognizing that he could still do it.
But at the same time, you have some other great people like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who it sounds like, who kind of just get thrown to the side. And
yeah, great actor, horribly underutilized.
Yeah.
So we really won't know anything for sure until Lincoln comes out. But when it does, I guarantee at least one of us will be there to review it.
Yeah, exactly.
That moves us on to our next section. We have our reviews section for Arrow. All right, Arrow premiered this week on the CW network. This is a telling of the comic book property Green Arrow, or The Green Arrow. They have turned it into a television show similar to that of Smallville that outlines the life and exploits of Oliver Queen, rich billionaire.
In my opinion, Batman version 2.
The poor man's Batman. So he is here with his own show, similar to that, like I said, similar to that of Smallville, and his alter ego, the Green Arrow. What are your thoughts?
You know, I actually really liked it. I said it reminded me a lot of Batman Begins, but not in a bad way. I mean, I love Batman Begins, but sometimes you feel like, okay, they're just rehashing the same old thing.
Cheap
but,
copy.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it worked really well. And that's the thing, is because Oliver Queen is very much Bruce Wayne. You know, it's the billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, things like that. And so, except just much more politically driven. But I thought it was really good. There are definitely some parts that are rough around the edges. I mean, said the little twist at the end was just kind of a facepalm, and some of the dialogue is a little obnoxious. But overall, it did keep me interested enough that, you know, I put on my DVR to record for next week, because I want it to succeed, because I love anything that has comic book superheroes in a media format is good news, in my opinion. And I think this one also shows that, you know, my wife doesn't really care much for comic book heroes at all, but she was intrigued enough to watch the show. Even though she's pretending to be doing something else, you know, she kept on asking questions about what was going on. So I think it goes for both comic book fans and non-comic book fans. It also reminded me a little bit of Person of Interest, in the sense of, you know, going after, at least the first episode, of just, you know, him beating the crap out of everybody and going after these people who are kind of wronging others, I guess. But so we'll see.
Yeah, now I'm a little less enthusiastic than Devin is. I thought it was good. I thought it was a good show. There were times where it felt like it was trying very hard to take itself very seriously. When I think it could have used a little more levity. But I mean, I love that there was a lot of winks and nods to fans of the Green Arrow series. Showing Deathstroke's mask at one point. His sister's nickname was the same name of his sidekick in the comic books.
Speedy, right?
Exactly.
Who
Speedy.
Had drug problems.
Who has drug problems like his sister does in the show. So there's a lot of little things like that which were great to see, and good to know that they're at least, even though they're changing the story enough to adapt for television, they're still trying to give it enough of a feel that people who know the comic books will recognize and appreciate what they're doing. Like I said, there are moments of dialogue where you wish you could just mute it and watch him beat people up. But the action was good. The overall story was good. I can't wait to find out what happened more on the island. I hope they delve more into that.
Well, that's what drove it for me, was the fact of so I don't know as much about Green Arrow as about some of the others, but you know, something happened on the island, and that's what kind of drove it for me, was the fact I want to find out what got him on the island that changed him so much to where he wanted to become the Green Arrow.
Yeah. Which, you know, and that's the biggest thing that's going to make me come back for more, is like, how is the story, how is where he is now from where you see him left off in the past? Where do the two ends come together? Yeah. I think, and in particular, Deathstroke's mask is on the island.
So, exactly.
Like, how does that come into play? And you know what's got to, and you know that's what people are looking forward to, and that's what they're banking on.
Yeah.
Is that you will want to know the end of that mystery, so you'll stick around.
Well, something I thought was interesting as well, is it kind of goes a little with DC, is I think trying to do in general is, you know, it's a Green Arrow is a DC superhero. And because what happens is DC, when it comes to the animation department, hands down better than Marvel.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, in my opinion, there's no question.
No question. And Marvel's not bad, they're just no DC.
Yeah. When it comes to the movies aspect, except for the Dark Knight trilogy, everything else is tanked. Well, except for the Batman character. Batman is, said, I'm not talking about 1978, you know, Christopher Reeve Superman or Tim Burton Batman. I'm talking about recently.
Yeah.
You know, except for the Dark Knight trilogy, everything else that DC's done is...
Yeah, Green Arrow that just didn't work.
Yeah, and people right now, I'm optimistic about Man of Steel, but people are, you know, not excited about it. But Marvel's really gotten their act together, and so... I wonder if Green Arrow, because it does have more of that realistic, gritty approach that reminds me a lot of Batman Begins, mm-hmm. if this is kind of if they're finally drawing the lines in the sand of, okay, this is how we're going to do our superhero movies, which if that's the case, I'm excited about, because I like that about DC. I love the polished thing for Marvel, because I think that works great for Marvel. I think the realistic type thing, the Dark Knight trilogy, wouldn't work for any of the Marvel characters, mm-hmm. But DC, it seems to be working well for them. I say stick to that formula.
So you think TV is going to kind of run as a testing ground to see what they can get off, see what kind of reaction they get with this newer, more gritty feel?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's going to be, if they're doing that on purpose or whatnot, but it seems to be the approach they're taking. Because, it reminded, even though it seemed like Smallville, the approach still seems a little different than Smallville's approach.
Right. It's a little heavier.
Yeah.
Than exactly. Smallville ever was. Even at its, most poignant times, it never felt as dark and as heavy as Arrow does.
Exactly. And so we'll see what happens. But that also begs the question as well, Marvel is now having their TV series with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
So what approach are they going to take? And is that going to be similar to Arrow? Is it going to be something different as well? And how will the two... will they correlate at all, or how will they correlate?
Which one will end up winning the TV realm?
Yeah. In which I don't know if you can compare the two, because S.H.I.E.L.D. is about agents who work for S.H.I.E.L.D. We don't know how many superheroes are going to be involved in that. I doubt it's going to be – you're going to see Robert Downey Jr. Or any of those type of people.
No, you'll see pictures. You'll hear talk. But it would take a lot, I think, to get any of the major stars to make cameos.
Yeah. So that's the thing. How will they be compared or be comparable at all? Or if S.H.I.E.L.D. would be just more like an action crime type show. So we'll see. But now we got more comic book heroes now entering the TV realm, which I think is also great. I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
Absolutely. Now, your official review. Should they watch it? Should they skip it? What is your take?
I would say as of right now, I would say watch it right now. At least watch the pilot. It's on Hulu. It's on Hulu. If you have a tablet, you can download the CW app, and it's on that as well.
Yes.
I would say at least give it a couple episodes, because I know there are some shows that once they kind of get the ground and once they kind of know what they're doing, then they're able to launch really hard. And so I see potential with this once it kind of gets all smooth around the edges and really knows what it wants to do, then it'll be a great show.
So because look at Firefly, if you can make it through the first two episodes, it becomes a great show.
It was the first four for me. I mean, after four episodes, then it got good. But before that, I had to force myself to watch it because everyone raved about it, so which I'm glad I did.
But. Then after finishing, you go back and you appreciate those first couple episodes a little more once you know the characters and everything.
Yeah, once you kind of know what it's about.
As for myself, I'm in the same boat as Devin. Give it at least two episodes. Watch the pilot. That should at least pique your interest enough to give it one more. If after two it hasn't really started building where it needs to be, you can probably pass at that point. But give it at least the two. Make an informed decision before you skip.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, that ends up for our review. Next up, we're going to have our From the Vault section, where we'll be talking about Troll 2. All right. So, as we said, Troll 2. This is a movie that is horrendous. Casey's been begging for me to watch this movie forever. It's made in 1990. The entire cast are just a bunch of local Utah residents who thought they're going to be extras and ended up becoming the main characters of this movie. And written by, I guess, an Italian director?
Yeah, it's by an Italian director's wife, and then the husband directed it.
And it's not even a sequel to anything. What it is it's about goblins, but the marketers didn't know what to do, so they just made it a sequel to a previous movie called Troll that have no relation to each other at all.
Just sheerly to capitalize on the name, because they had no idea how to market this movie.
And it is horrendous.
Yes.
It is so bad.
I mean, it's about a family who goes on vacation to a little town full of vegetarians who turn out to be goblins who want to make the family eat their vegetables so that they can in turn turn around and eat them.
By turning to trees or something like that.
Yes. It's every bit as awesome as it sounds.
But that's the thing, is it's gained a huge cult following, huge cult status, and is now actually as a documentary done by the main child in the thing called, or his name's, I think, Michael Stevenson. He did a documentary called The Best Worst Movie about how this has gained such a cult following. And it's a great documentary. And that's the thing, this movie, if you're going to watch it by yourself, don't. You're going to be wasting an hour and a half of your life.
It'll be painful.
Yeah. But if you're going to be watching with friends, or I know Riff Tracks also has a riff of it, which is also hilarious. It's done by it's not Bill and Kevin are not on it, but it's Mike and then a guest, and I can't remember the guest's name on top of my head, and I apologize for that. But it is hilarious, and so and that's like $3, and it's worth the $3. And with Riff Tracks, you can never go wrong. But this movie, you kind of have to watch it because it's so bad, it's good.
Absolutely.
This thing if you out, watch with a group setting.
Exactly. I mean, this thing came out in 1990. I remember seeing it on HBO when I was a child.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
It's got HBO status.
HBO, that's right. So they made it big time. And it was, even then, like as cool as it was being like eight, it was, you know, 10, you know, 2, 3, 4 years later, you realize how horrible this movie really was.
Oh, yeah.
But it's become huge. They have, you know, viewing parties every year. You know, people get up and act these things out in the theaters. They rent out whole halls just to sit and watch this movie.
And they sell out.
They do. You know, people love this movie for how strange and over the top and horrible it is.
Well, it's got everything of a great movie. You got goblins with horrible masks.
Absolutely. And pointy sticks.
Yeah, and pointed sticks. You have a witch who seduces an 18-year-old boy by eating corn on the cob.
That turns into popcorn.
Yeah, it turns into popcorn. You have Stonehenge. You have a grandpa who's dead, who keeps on coming back and then never coming back again, but then comes back again. Then basically with a cocktail bomb, shows his grandson how to burn down a house.
But instead,
burns down the pastor.
Sets the pastor on fire.
Who's a goblin.
So yeah, it's okay. So it's all right.
So, I mean, there's great life lessons in this movie as well. So,
absolutely. If you don't feel uplifted by watching this, I don't know what we can do for you.
So what do you think, though, Casey? Is this a movie that is worth watching again? Is this worth watching? It's free on Netflix. I mean, it's free on
streaming. Netflix.
As well as a documentary.
Yes. If you find this sitting in a bin at Walmart for $2, skip it. Oh. But since you can watch it for free on Netflix, find a group of friends and watch it. Don't waste your time doing it by yourself, but get a group of friends. You know, cook some popcorn. If you're willing to mess with their heads, cook some popcorn, get some a vegetable tray, cover everything in green, and you'll understand
why we
watch it.
Get some green jello in a sense, you know.
Exactly. And then watch this movie. It's a nonstop laugh fest, especially when you can talk all the way through it and make fun of it as you go along. I think that's worth your money. But skip it if you're going to try and do it alone.
Yeah. Instead, if you have some friends who aren't really great at making funny commentary throughout, you know, get some riff tracks that'll help you along the way. But this is one of those movies, again, that you just kind of have to see because it's gained such cult status and it's just, you know, and it's such a huge following. You just have to watch it.
Exactly. You shouldn't, but you have to.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. So
it's like nobody should want to see this movie, but once you've seen it, you will appreciate everything else.
Well, especially after you watch the documentary and you see what these guys are doing now with their lives. I mean, it's...
Absolutely. I mean, this killed a lot of careers.
Oh, yeah.
Granted, it's like Southern Utah, and like there's a lot of careers to begin with, but even those that tried to move on from there, it was
a painful road.
Yes, it was.
So a very difficult road, but... anyway, so that's it for us for this week. Tune in next time. We'll be giving you some more movie news and reviews, as well as another portion of From the Vault.
That's right. Until next time, happy viewing. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Between the Reels. Our bumper music is provided by Kevin MacLeod. We'll see you next week.